Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
I don't think I've ever been this nervous. It's certainly unlike anything I've ever done before. With Malon, it was so different. We were neighbors. And when we became of marrying age, our parents took care of everything for us. There was a period of courtship, an agreed upon dowry, and a simple ceremony. And thankfully, we actually liked each other, so that helped. It seems like we were barely settling into our marriage before I lost him. Before we lost him. Naomi was so good to me. We held each other up through what seemed like a constant stream of loss. First, it was her husband, Elimelech, and then it was her oldest son, Killian, and finally, it was my Malon. The loss, of course, was multiplied because there were no heirs. Naomi has nothing. We have nothing without a son to carry on Elimelech's line. But I would never leave her. She's my home. Her people are my people. Her God is my God. And so, now, Naomi is certain that it was God's providence that I chose to glean in Boaz's field. But this crazy plan of hers, certainly, this can't also be from God. Can it? She's asked me to bathe in scented oils, put on my nicest dress, wait until Boaz has had his fill of food and drink, and then I am to sneak onto the threshing floor. The threshing floor, which is no place for a woman. Well, a respectable woman, anyway. I do trust Naomi. And Naomi seems to trust Boaz to do the right thing. He's always been so kind and respectful. But will this crazy plan ruin everything? When I am discovered, will I be met with kindness or his horror or his rejection or something worse? To uncover a man's feet is an act of desperation. Tonight we'll decide if I will live a life of disgrace or redemption. Only Naomi's God knows for sure. And I can only pray that he is a God of compassion.
Happy Mother's Day weekend. I'll say it one more time. Happy Mother's Day weekend. Okay, that was the right answer. You need this sermon, apparently. So So I have a question for you on this Mother's Day weekend. What are you willing to do for your mother-in-law? Okay, first service that didn't land, but this, you guys are on it. Okay. I thought I'd give it another shot because I liked it. What are you willing to do? What would you be willing to do for your mother-in-law? Because that's kind of what this sermon is about. That's what this sermon is about. For those of you who are maybe here just for the first time, we are doing a series on the book of Ruth, and this is the penultimate, every time I get a chance to use that word, the penultimate sermon in that series. It is a four-part series. It's the third one. And we are in Ruth chapter 3. We've already gone through the first two chapters of Ruth, and now we find ourselves in chapter 3. And there are going to be a couple things that we haven't talked about so far that I need to talk to you about if you're really going to understand this correctly. So what I want you to do is to kind of stick with me for a second. There's two concepts that we're going to have to get in place if we're really going to understand what's happening in chapter 3. All right, raise your hand if you understand levirate marriage. Excellent. Come up and explain it because okay. That's why everybody else didn't raise their hand. I love it. No, nobody does. Anyway, so let me go ahead and explain this concept to the 99% of you who are a little less than clear on what levirate marriage is and why it matters. This is a concept that you're actually going to find in a number of places in the Old Testament. And if you understand it in Ruth, it'll actually help you understand other stories in the Old Testament as well. Basically, this is laid out in the law that God gives to the Israelites, but it was actually something that was practiced even before Moses and the law are given. And what levirate marriage is this. A man marries a woman. They don't have children. Man dies. Woman marries man's brother. This is a new concept. I heard a little bit. So there's a couple of you that are kind of thinking about what that would mean in today's culture and time. So the idea was that if your husband died before the two of you produced children, that you would marry the next eligible brother in line, go down the line, could even move into relatives, but the next eligible male, and you would produce a child that would actually be named after your dead husband. If you haven't noticed in the Bible, genealogies are a big deal. And the idea in Jewish life was that you kind of continued on in your name. And so you didn't want your name to be forgotten. And so part of levirate marriage was making sure that a person's name was not forgotten, that they produced a child that would kind of continue on. And I know what a few of you are thinking, well, I would not want to marry my brother-in-law or whatever. However, one of the things we often, and I talk to you about this a lot, we come to the Bible with our cultural frame and our lens, and we think, how oppressive, how awful. In some cases, that's absolutely fair and true. In this case, I want you to think a little bit more deeply, though. In our time, women have access to pretty much any job they want to do. You can go to work, you can earn a living if you're female. In the time of the Old Testament, that just simply was not the case. Women did not have access to reputable jobs. And so if you found yourself a widow and you had no children, as I talked about in Ruth chapter 1, you would be in a very desperate place. Because if you had a child, that child was required to take care of you. A little bit different than today's culture. But that child was responsible to take care of you and to make sure that you were taken care of. But if you had no children, you had no husband, what then? Well, that's where the idea of levirate marriage comes in for, and that's where it becomes beneficial to the woman, because the brother is required now to take care of his dead brother's wife. She was going to be provided for. A child would come in this marriage in one way or another, and that child would then take care of mom, as well as the husband as long as he was alive. So this was actually a pretty big deal. In fact, for a man to turn this down, because men could do that. Men could say, I'm not going to do that. Not going to do it. They could do that, but there was a penalty for it. Would you like to see the penalty? We can find that penalty in Deuteronomy 25, which is, by the way, where you can find out more about levirate marriage when you go home today and decide to research it further. The widow must walk over to the man who has refused to do his duty in presence of the elders, pull his sandal from his foot. You're going to find out that feet are kind of a big deal. There's maybe some euphemism in here. Pull the sandal from his foot, spit in his face. Then she must declare, this is what happens to a man who refuses to provide his brother with children. Ever afterward in Israel, the family will be referred to as the family of the man whose sandal was pulled off. Check their last name to find out what it means. And while that may not seem like a big deal in our time and our culture, that was a pretty big deal in their time and their culture. This is a pretty big deal. So, how many people understand what levirate marriage is now? I'm not going to ask you to come up here. Okay, only a few of you, so I'm going to have to explain it again. So, let's start over at the beginning. We're going to open our Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 25. How many people do understand what levirate marriage is now? Okay, I guess I don't have to keep doing it. All right. So we have one concept down. Let's move to another concept, the final concept that I want you to be sure you understand as we talk about Ruth chapter 3. The final concept I want you to understand is the concept of the kinsman redeemer. I'm not going to get into it deeply today, but I want you to understand that biblically, Jesus is considered a kinsman redeemer to us. Theologically, that is a concept. So kind of put that in the back of your mind as I'm explaining to you what a kinsman redeemer is. In Leviticus, again, 25, it talks about that the land can't ever really be permanently sold. It can be sold temporarily for up to 50 years. But then in what was called the year of Jubilee, the land would revert back to the original family owner. So you could go ahead and sell your property. You could mortgage it, so to speak, for up to 50 years. But here's the problem. If you have no property in that time and that place, you have no way of providing for your family or yourself. So it was going to be really important for you to get that property back if you can. Here's the problem. If some of you who have had credit cards like me, you know that once you start kind of, you know, accumulating debt, it's kind of a little hard. And especially if you lose the source of income to repay the debt, which is what's happening with the property, you can be in a lot of trouble. You can't get it back. And so what would happen is a poor family had the option of having one of their family members who is known as a kinsman redeemer who would come along and pay off the mortgage. And so now the property comes back into the family. It belongs to the family again, and now your opportunities to make money off of your field are there. The kinsman redeemer also had other duties besides just helping pay off debt. One of them was actually avenging murder. If somebody in your family was murdered unjustly, which generally is the way murder works, the kinsman redeemer's job was to actually avenge that death, and that was also part of their responsibility, which is one of the reasons why Boaz is also known as somebody who is strong, and a lot of theologians think he was some kind of warrior in some way. So kinsman redeemer, do we understand that? Okay, I'll take nodding heads and I'll go for that. I just wanted to explain levirate marriage twice, really. So we're all on the same page coming in to Ruth chapter 3. In Ruth chapter 3, by the way, can you just imagine having, if you're a mother, having a conversation with your daughter-in-law like the one that Naomi's about to have? Okay, all right. Well, let me explain because maybe you haven't heard the story. So Naomi comes to Ruth at the very beginning of Ruth chapter 3, which you can follow along if you have your Bible electronically or in your hand. Feel free to turn to Ruth chapter 3. Naomi comes along to Ruth and she says, hey, look, Ken Wetmore paraphrase. Gleaning the fields has worked out in chapter 2. But do you really want to do that for the rest of your life? And what do we do during the winter? We need a permanent solution. We need something. I need to do something to help you permanently take care of yourself. We need to do something to make this work. And here's the thing. Boaz is the answer. But it's going to be a little tricky, Ruth. And this isn't written in Ruth chapter 3, but I'm going to read between the lines of Ruth chapter 3. Because in the Bible, it's generally high context. In other words, you have to understand the context, and they're not going to have a lot of details. You just have to, you fill in the details yourself. And so what Naomi almost certainly said to Ruth is this: Boaz is one of our kinsmen redeemer. However, he isn't the first in line. There's another kinsman redeemer, because Naomi, even though at the very beginning of chapter 3, she doesn't say this, there is no chance on earth that Naomi didn't know that Boaz wasn't the next in line. This is like saying that you don't understand what McDonald's is if you live in the United States. It's like you don't understand what fast food. You know what McDonald's offers. You know what Taco Bell offers. You know these things. And so there's not a chance on earth that Naomi didn't know that Boaz wasn't the next in line. But what Naomi did know was that Boaz was the right person. That for whatever reason, the first in line kinsman redeemer was not the right person. So she's going to ask Ruth to do something incredibly risky. Boaz knows that he's not next in line, so he's been a perfect gentleman. Young lady, older guy. Remember in chapter 2, he refers to her as my daughter. Daughter, my daughter. Says that a lot. And Naomi says, here's the thing, Ruth, we've got a perception problem. We're going to need, if we're going to make this levirate marriage, kinsman redeemer thing work, we're going to have to get to Boaz to not see you as my daughter. Even in that time, we're going to need to get him to see you as a potential wife. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to dress up. You're going to smell good. There's going to be a big event up at Boaz's place tonight. They're going to be finishing threshing the grain. Big party afterwards. Everybody will be really worn out from everything, but they're all going to stay and sleep on the threshing floor to guard the grain before it goes to market. So what you're going to do is you're going to be at the party, but you're going to be inconspicuous for the first bit of it, okay? You're going to wait till everybody goes to sleep and it's really dark. And then you're going to be paying attention, by the way, to where Boaz goes and lays down. And then you're going to go uncover his feet. So, theologians like to argue about this. There are theologians that believe this is very much a euphemism. If you do not know what euphemism means, you may go ahead and look that up on your own time, but because we are a family church, we are going to leave it right there. But there are theologians that believe very much that there is a euphemism happening here when it says to uncover his feet. And there are theologians, by the way, on the other side that no, that's exactly what it means. That she went and she was to go lay down at his feet. Whatever the case, Ruth follows Naomi's instructions, and she goes and she does exactly as Naomi has said. And after it gets dark, she goes and she uncovers Boaz's feet and lays down there. And the Bible says late in the night, Boaz was startled, because that can happen when your feet are uncovered, right? And so... And so Boaz wakes up and says, whoa, whoa, who's there? And Ruth says, it's your servant, Ruth. And then she makes a request. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. Ruth was absolutely brilliant. She was such a smart woman. Why do I say that? I want you to pay attention to the wording at the very, it says, spread the corner of your covering over me. Okay. That doesn't seem that smart. It is. Here's why. Let's go back to Ruth chapter 2. And I said that and hit back on my button instead of forward. Let's look at Ruth chapter, this is actually 2. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done. These are Boaz's words to Ruth in chapter 2. So when Ruth is out there faithfully gleaning and providing for Naomi, Boaz puts a blessing on her. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done. So here's what's brilliant about what Ruth does. Ruth has not forgotten the blessing that Boaz gave her. And the wording, under whose wings you have come, is the exact same wording as spread the corner of your covering. We miss that in the language, but in the original language, it is the exact same wording. So basically, Ruth says, would you answer the blessing that you gave me? You pray that God would take care of me. Now I'm asking you to be his hands and feet and do so. Brilliant. Brilliant. But have you ever asked somebody to love you and not been sure what the answer was going to be? Have you ever asked someone to take care of you that you knew you desperately needed them to take care of you, but you weren't sure what the answer was going to be? Can you imagine how terrifying this would have been for Ruth? Because all Boaz has to do is jump up and shout, what is this woman doing here? I'm an honest man, I'm a virtuous man, this is not me, this is her. And she's a foreigner. She's the out-of-town person. He can completely humiliate her, completely ruin her chances of anything. So I need you to understand just how gutsy this was on Ruth's part on so many different levels. But Naomi knew, she knew her kinsman. And she had a good idea of what Boaz was going to do, because Boaz was a faithful person. So what is Boaz's reaction after being asked to do this? He says to her, the Lord bless you, my daughter. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. In other words, he's pointing something out that we need to remember. Ruth had options. She didn't have to take care of Naomi. She could have just taken care of herself. She could have gone and found some guy that was, you know, whatever it was that she wanted, instead of being stuck with the family redeemer in Leveret marriage. She did not have to do what she did. And this is so characteristic of Ruth throughout the whole book of Ruth. Ruth is so faithful. She's so compassionate. She's such a friend to Naomi. And so Boaz extols her. And so this must have, like, can you just feel the relief coming off of Ruth as he says this? Now, don't worry about a thing, Boaz says. I will do what is necessary for everyone in town knows you're a virtuous woman. In other words, he says, even though you're laying here right now, I get why you're having to do that. And I know who you are, and the people in town know who you are too. We know who you are. You're good people. Boaz points out to her that he isn't the next nearest kinsman. He says, you've asked for a good thing. I'd be willing to do it, but I cannot just do this. I have to go and see if the nearest kinsman redeemer is willing to go ahead and do what's supposed to be required of him to do. But I hear what you're saying. So Boaz tells Ruth, look, I'm going to give you a bunch of food to take home to Naomi. I need you to go ahead and leave before it gets light and people see you here so that we don't have any more buzz than we need. And I will take care of things right away. Ruth goes home, does as she's been told. Have you ever been out on, you know, an exciting event and you go home to tell somebody you care about? Can you just imagine Ruth going home and telling Naomi what's going on? So this is what happened, and then, you know, and this is what Boaz said. And I love the way that the third chapter of Ruth ends. Naomi knows her guy. And Naomi says about Boaz, don't worry, Ruth. He's not going to let the sun go down without making sure this is taken care of. He's pretty excited. He will make sure that everything is taken care of. And that's going to lead us into next week's chapter 4. I have to tell you, I struggle a little bit with this chapter because what's the lesson here for you and me? We don't have leveret marriage. We don't have the kinsman redeemer in our culture. But I was always told that I'm supposed to have some people leave here with something that they can take and work on. And as I really thought about this chapter, the thought that hit me was Ruth's name. Remember, I've told you names matter. Do you know what Ruth's name means? It means compassionate friend. This weekend, we're celebrating mothers. And I would say that while not everybody's mother is the perfect mother, what we celebrate this weekend is the spirit of mothers, the spirit of self-sacrifice, the spirit of giving, the spirit of doing for others when it's not always what's best for you. And when I look at the story of Ruth, I wonder what you can take away for what it means to be a faithful, compassionate friend to the people in your life. Even if not everything is exactly the same as in those times, what does it look like in 2025 to be like Ruth, to be like Naomi, to be like Boaz, but especially Ruth, a faithful, compassionate friend? Go home and ask Jesus what that means for you.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. Loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life takeaways for this message. Swipe up in today's show notes and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.